Hey, welcome back to the Going Deeper podcast. This is episode 8. I can't believe we're on episode 8 already.
It's amazing.
We are just now catching up to Star Wars and the amount of Star Wars movies. And so we're going to have to keep going. So just like Star Wars. Hey, I'm Robbie, and we are so excited that you would join us. And joining me today to my right, well, everybody's to my right today, is Wayne.
How's everybody doing today?
And Jeff.
Good morning.
And JD.
What's up?
Hey, today we are we're wrapping up on our Sunday morning, a four-week series about money. To some people, celebrate, a celebration, right? And so, but now we can get on to things that really matter. No, just kidding. But that idea that money, it holds us, or we can use it, right? And this idea of that, really, it defines where we put our trust, right? And so, Jeff, I guess I'll pitch it to you. What are some things maybe you think, hey, I wish I could have spent a little bit more time on that?
Well, I think it really does boil down to a matter of trust. And one of the comments that I made on the outline was that when we view our relationship with God as a transaction rather than a trusting relationship, then what happens is it won't sustain us through the storms of life, and it won't allow us to take leaps of faith. Because it's a transaction, it's not really trust. And I didn't really get a chance to really dive into the whole leaps of faith part of that, but when our relationship with God is not built on trust, then we're not willing to take risks. We tend to play it safe. We tend to only engage in those kind of activities or whatever that we can maintain control and that we really can do without having to have God involved, and then we limit our impact in a tremendous way. And so, that was one thing that I wish I had had a little bit more time to kind of weigh in on.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand that anytime I can just speak for Good News Gathering, when we're teaching about finances, it's not because we need your money,
right?
It's that if we're reading through scripture and trying to be as biblical as possible, that there's an attitude about money that it can control us. Or that we can use it, and so just to understand that.
And I think that's why Jesus made such a point of saying you can't serve both God and money, because money becomes a rival God, and it does very easily, because you have to have it and you have to spend it. JD made that point very clear in the week before, and you need to save some, but in all of that, how we use money is God first. That's really where it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, I think we can get into this almost poverty mentality that say, "No, I'm going to follow Jesus. I have to be poor," and that's not it. Or we judge people based on, oh, they drive a nice car, they live in a big house, and we can say, "Man, you have no idea how much impact they're making, mm-hmm. how much they give away,
exactly.
What difference they're making in the kingdom of God." Now, the amount isn't concerning to God. It's the heart of that. And we see that in Jesus' teaching, the widow's mite and things like mm-hmm. that. It has more to do with your heart in the matter.
Well, and I think you're always on dangerous ground when you are looking at others and trying to judge how they deal with whatever they have or don't have. I think sometimes we're as prone to elevate the poor and to assume that somehow it's a closer to God thing to be poor as we de-elevate those who are wealthier than us and think, well, they have too much. Well, we don't always know what they're doing with it. And it's like there was a person that used to come to Good News Gathering now lives away, but this person, whenever he knew that there was a need at Good News Gathering, it was not unusual for him to walk up to me and with his checkbook out and say, "Just tell me what to write." That's a person that God was using, who made a ton of money and very wealthy individual, but whose checkbook was wide open for the work of God. And I think God gifts some people to be very good with money and able to make large amounts of money, because he knows that they will be conduits for his ministry.
Yeah, and I wonder if sometimes our concept of that poverty or rich mentality maybe plays into a misunderstanding of Jesus when he says, right, it's easier for a camel to enter the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. Mm-hmm. To which the disciples, if I'm correct, go, well, then who can get to heaven?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, right. But understanding, you know, culturally what that was, and we won't go into that, but that it's a state of the heart.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then I think we still fall into that. Like, oh, you know, I have a money in the bank account. God has blessed me. If I'm poor, what have I done wrong? You know, and we miss out entirely on that. So Jeff, you brought up something and I just want to push back. It's something called the tithe challenge, not the Tide Pod challenge, but the tithe challenge. Can you just explain that, what that is?
Yeah. one of the things that we've done in the past and we'll do it again this year on Decision Day, which is coming up on Sunday, is we put a challenge out there to people. And that challenge is that if you have never tithed before, this is a way that you can actually live out the scripture in Malachi 3:10, where God says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. And then he goes on to say something that's not said anywhere else in scripture. He says, test me in this. Typically, when the Bible indicates that somebody was testing God, it's not a good thing, and it's not well received. But in this particular situation, God specifically says, test me in this. And so really what the tithe challenge is it's that opportunity to engage in that scripture. And we tell people that if you will give over the next 4 months in an identifiable way, obviously, it has to be something that our financial folks can track. And then if at the end of that 4 months, you can honestly say, I don't believe that God has blessed me. And that's not in any kind of financial return necessarily. It could be increased joy. It could be a sense of peace. It could be a lack of anxiety over your finances because now you're ordering them better, whatever way it is that God blesses you. But if at the end of that 4 months, you can honestly say, God has not blessed me, then our financial people will refund your money. They'll give it back.
I feel like there should be a catch. Is there a catch?
No, there is no catch. There's no catch.
That's good. So real, I mean, really there's,
because as far as we're concerned, this is totally between you and God. And so if it's not really about looking at our financial person and saying, I don't think God's blessing me. You can, it's really you looking at God and say, you know what? You didn't keep your end of the bargain.
Hmm. Yeah,
and we'll just give you your money back.
Well, no, I you know, I've heard churches do that before, and it's always an interesting thing. I would challenge any of our listeners to take that challenge and to see how God might use you and bless you. And remember that's as Jeff said, that's not always a financial return. It doesn't always work that way. I give you 100, he gives me 1,000. I think you said that this past Sunday, right?
It's right.
You know, sometimes that those math equations don't work out that way, which I appreciate because I'm not very good at math. So,
well, you know, and another thing I would encourage people who are coming to Good News, who have not yet crossed the line of faith, who maybe are not certain that God actually exists, to try it. To take the tithe challenge, because what have you got to lose? Really nothing, because the guarantee is you'll get it back if God doesn't show up and do something in your life. And so I would encourage people who would consider themselves at this point in their lives non-believers to give it a shot and see if through this challenge they don't see God at work in their lives.
You know, just one brief example for myself. A few years back, my wife and I kind of mentioned this at one point in one of our recent discussions. My wife and I went to Haiti, and we were talking just kind of about our lives and where we wanted to go next and things we wanted to do. And we made the decision that we wanted to pay off all of our student loans like quickly. We wanted to really double down on that and get out of debt. And that was just a decision that we made. At the same time, we decided also to be as generous as possible with giving. as well. And what was fascinating was not that, that God endowed us with these random windfalls of money, but the way he would take care of little things along the way. Like one particular vacation, it was almost hilarious because I had a work trip. And so my wife went with me, and it was kind of like a mini vacation for us because I had to go for this work thing, but she was able to tag along and stay in the room and all that kind of stuff. And we were able to get time together during this whole work thing. And on three or four separate occasions, because of different things that happened during the week, we ended up with free meals, you know, and on, you know, things that got kind of just randomly taken care of in the moment. It wasn't like he handed us big cash, you know, but at the same time, we're trying to be faithful with the church. We're trying to be faithful to get out of debt. And it was like he just did these little things along the way to let us know, hey, you're doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing. Keep it up. Don't quit. Don't back down. Use that money wisely. You know, and it was just, there was a period of my life where I just felt like, oh my goodness, I can so see his consistent hand on these little things of life. It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't a $500 check in the mail. It was just these little ways where he took care of us that kind of prompted us to be mindful that, like, hey, we're doing the right thing. Keep trusting. Keep putting your hope in me on this. Know that I'll be there to provide if necessary. And it just, it expanded our faith greatly. And what was amazing is we paid it off in half the time that we expected to. I don't know how. Like, I honestly don't know how. It wasn't like we made a ton more money. It wasn't, but it just, in the process of being smart and in the process of trusting him, there were things that just got taken care of, and all of a sudden you experience a true joy in your giving, a true joy in getting out of debt, and a true joy in being able to rely upon the promises of God.
I think it's so important what you're talking about, because even as so many Christians today, where are you getting your financial advice from? And a lot of them are even turning to the world. And I think that's why it's so important that this is taught in the church, that who are we listening to when it comes to our finances?
Yeah.
Where there's so much stuff in the Bible. And if you guys hadn't had that taught to you, look where you might be today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Even as Christians, I think we need to turn to, okay, God, what do you teach in your word about our finances? And that's where we need to be taken. Because all the Christians are, even in the church today, is going to the world and saying, well, what does the world tell me to know? What does God ask you to do? What does he teach us to do? And I think that's why it's so important. And it comes down to that thing that I loved what you taught on Sunday, Jeff, was, do you trust? And I think that is a growth. I mean, as a Christian, you grow and learn to trust more and more. And when you do one thing, you trust in another, and you start, and all of a sudden you've got that trust. And that's when you start to grow. And Robbie mentioned the widow's mite. I mean, he says she is given more than all of you because of the condition of her heart. And I want everybody out there to know, you don't have to give $1 million to be blessed. Because God says, are you given out of your heart, your condition of your heart, because you want to change life? So I just want to make sure everybody understands that. He says, you have given more than all the others put together, because you've given out of your necessity.
You know, I've had people tell me that when they decided to tithe, there was no mathematical way that it should work because of their credit card debt or whatever. But once they began to tithe, then they became so much more careful with what they did with the remainder that they had. And they became so much more wise about it. And I had one person tell me, you know, I'm six months into tithing, and I've paid off credit card debt, and I don't know how that happened. There's no, just looking at my finances, there's no way this should have worked, but it did. And it's God's hand at work. That's what it is.
Yeah, I've had that happen to me before. I can speak to that.
Yeah. I think there is the United States economy, and then there is God's economy.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, in just the raw numbers of what we're looking at on a spreadsheet or a piece of paper, it can seem very daunting to give away any of that, especially for our folks who are in difficult financial circumstances, massive debt or low income jobs or situations where there is no job in the home. I mean, there are people, real people that love God that are in those situations. And it's difficult, but there is an access to God, or I guess through giving, you gain access to an economy that isn't based on numbers and isn't based on the stock market and isn't based on the realities that we know in the banking industry or anything of that nature. You gain access to the unlimited resources of the creator of the universe. And to the best of our ability, every Christian at every level of American financial strata should want to be tapping into the economy of the creator of the universe.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the $10, I mean, if you go to Kroger's, $10 is $10. Mm-hmm. It's not going to get you any more than $10. But $10 in God's kingdom can mean so much more. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he can take and multiply it into, I mean, you think about your sponsorship in Haiti, and $20 a month to sponsor a child in Haiti, for us have been down there, it's amazing that you can feed a child, clothe a child, and send them to school for $20.
When you actually look at their numbers, they're really, they're in many cases, they're actually doubling, actually serving four kids, exactly, for the sponsorship amount, mm-hmm, that you're covering for one. Mm-hmm. Because of the numbers of kids they're serving overall and the number of kids they have sponsored, exactly, it's pretty much 1-4. Mm-hmm. And so they're stretching dollars in, yeah, God-sized ways down there.
You can't take your $20 to the store and say, oh, by the way, if I go to Lowe's after this and say, I got $20, can you stretch that into $40 or $80? It's not going to happen.
I feel like my wife could do that. She's a pretty good kid. There's times I'm like, how did you save that much? Like, they just give her stuff to walk out of the store with. About 6 years ago, we were on a mission trip. We'd taken a group of 11 to L.A., Orange County area. And the trip was a Saturday through a Sunday. And on that Friday, before we were supposed to leave in, you know, 2 days, one of our people on the trip had a stroke and ended up in the hospital in Orange County. And it was one of those, like, what do we do? You know? I don't know. And that, so the rest of the team flew back, and we stayed behind with this woman and her son, and I mean, we were broke, you know, and I was like, I don't know how we're going to get back. And so we're sitting in church Sunday morning. We have no idea, like, where we're going to stay, no idea how we're going to travel around, no idea how we're going to eat. I mean, nothing. I'm like, okay. And we're sitting in worship, and Julie, my wife, she leans in next to me. She goes, I feel like God's telling me to give away our last $100. And I said, No, he's not. You know, like, try that one again. You know, like,
call him to pray back some more. Yeah, yeah. Like,
we still wrong got number time. Yeah, yeah. You know. And she's always been more attuned to that stuff than I am. And so I'm like, well, okay, you know. And mine was just an act of not trusting God, but trusting my wife in that moment. And so what was amazing about it is that, I mean, so many things happened. But by the end of the service, we had a family in the church say, why don't you guys just come stay with us until everything, we figure everything out. And they said, oh, also, we have a friend who has a car that he's not using. And I'm like, yeah, we all know how that kind of car is. You have a car you're not using, right? Guy pulls up in like a brand new Ford Edge and just hands me the keys. Like, here you go. Just, you know, whenever you're done with it. And, you know, so all of a sudden, staying with them, they provided all our meals for us. It was one of those moments in that next, I've stayed for like an extra 9 days, that it just taught me to, I revolutionized the way I thought about money, the way I thought about tithing, the way I thought about God. Mm. And it brought me closer to him in that, and also closer to my wife through that.
Sure.
Now, would I recommend that as like prescription? Like, you got $100 left, go ahead and drop that in the basket, you know? No, I'm not going to tell anybody to do that. That's between you and God happening. But it was just amazing to see his provision in those times. And then finally she was allowed, she was cleared for travel, and we flew back home, and now she's fine. But it was just like, wow, you know, amazing in those times. So, any other thoughts about that at all? Great. All right. Well, this past weekend, Jeff, we went through Prep One. And so I guess give a little 30-second commercial for what Prep One is, and maybe we can just kind of recap that real quick.
Well, we revamped Prep One because the leadership team came to the conclusion last fall that we needed to really come up with a definition of what we thought leadership is at Good News Gathering. And we came up with what we're calling the serve model. And it's based on Jesus' instruction in Matthew 20:28, where he says, I didn't come to be served, but to serve. And so we see that underlying thought process in leadership is service, is what it is. And so we came up with an acrostic based on that word serve. And the whole idea is to really get our leaders and our volunteers, and we want every leader and every volunteer to go through this, to really think in terms of what it means to serve this family of faith. And so that's really what that's all about.
JD, what do you think you'd say to somebody who's like, well, I'm not really a leader, I'm just here. Maybe that's not for me. What would you say to somebody about that?
Well, I think the thing that I would say initially is that you may not consider yourself a leader in this moment, but you are an influencer for somebody else. Even if you're just a volunteer in a ministry, somebody may be looking at you for how to effectively do that ministry. If you're working with kids, somebody's looking at you for an example. And the truth of the matter is, we are all going to lead someone at some point in our lives, and so we might as well get better at thinking about what Jesus called leadership, and that's how to serve. And here at GNG, we have some very specific ideas about what it means to be a servant leader. And I think it's really important for us all to remember that our example, our lifestyle, the way we live, the things that we do is going to impact somebody else. And so there's always room for us to get better at that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting when it comes to leadership that, you know, Jesus talks about leadership, and he says, don't lord it over them like the Gentiles, right. Which to me, that over, that dominating over, to me, that is the default that we have as human beings, mm-hmm. is power and control. And I love, because Jesus says, not so with you.
Right.
And that actually means that there's another path of leadership, and that it has to be learned. Mm-hmm. The fact that he would even talk about it says, oh, it has to be learned. And so, and I think it's important that we focus on that, that part of not so with you. And so the reality of if I'm a leader, I'm a servant.
Well, and to some degree or another, you never know what God might call you to. So you may be, a volunteer in a ministry with no designs or no thoughts about being the next leader, but you never know when God could call you up. And so things like Prep are really important because they expose your heart and mind to what God has to say about leadership, what God has to say about service, and it gives you an opportunity to allow God to connect with you and say, you know what, dude, I want to pull you up. You know, I want you to take on an extra level of ministry. I want you to serve in a greater way. And you miss out on some of those opportunities if you don't avail yourself to things like Prep or to things like greater service in a ministry.
Yeah, I just went to John Fogerty's center field. Put me in, coach.
Yeah,
right. So I'm ready to play.
All right. Yeah,
I can't sing it. Copyright issues. You know what?
Yeah, yeah.
Now.
Well, we actually think this is so important that we're presenting Prep 3 times this year. It'll come up again in April, and we'll advertise that, and then again in October, because we want every leader and every volunteer to go through that this year.
Yeah, so normally there's a Prep 1, 2, and 3, and just prepare to lead. But this year it's just all Prep 1s.
It's all Prep 1s this year. And we will be revamping Preps 2 and 3 down to where it's just a one-day thing like we did Prep 1.
Yeah, so before it was Friday night into Saturday. This time it's just one-day event, mm-hmm. To come. And it's really, I think, worth the time to do that. And so that's good. But we did have some questions that were sent to us. And so we're going to try to answer the best we can some of these as we move forward. You guys ready?
Yes, sir.
Are you geared up? Okay.
Let's do it.
And and this is where you give us grace as we answer these softball easy questions. No. But no, just
you know, it was funny. I've been taking in the Bible Project podcasts, and when they do it, and I've appreciated this, that instead of calling it Q&A, they call it Q&R.
Yeah.
Question and response, because it's like, hey, there are well-meaning Christians that are probably out there, and some of you may even be listening, where you might disagree with our answers, and that's okay. We're doing the best we can to read the Bible and submit to it, and you know, we'll answer these to the best of our ability, but it's one response among many potential responses. Take it, read the Bible for yourselves, and come up with what you think.
Yeah, I think that's good, because there are some things that, hey, we're going to come down hard and say, hey, this is it. You know, when it comes to Jesus, his divinity, things like that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other things that, man, this is open for interpretation. And as you dig deeper, you're going to realize that we really would like to think it's all black and white, and some of it we're open to interpret. I'm open to be proven wrong about some of that
Absolutely.
Stuff. Absolutely. And so, all right. So the first question, that we have, it says, basically, it looks like my daughter at her church recently, they did a message called When Bad Things Happen to Us, It's God Testing Our Faith, like he did with Abraham and Isaac. So I'm guessing the question there is, when bad things happen to us, is that God's way of testing our faith? What do you guys think?
Well, I think that we live in a fallen world. And so events happen in our lives. And I think the way to look at different events that happen in our lives is to look at them like a coin. And there's two sides to every coin. And on the one side, God is at work to bring about good in whatever event happens in our life. And you get that very clearly in Romans 8:28. At the same time, Satan is at work. There is an evil power there. And Satan is at work in that same event, trying to pull us away from God or trying to bring evil into our lives. And so when we face things, I think we have to be very careful about saying that, well, God did this to me to test me. Okay. I think he does use events. But some time ago, and this was probably 20 or 30 years ago, I was listening to a radio program where they were interviewing a very famous hockey player at the time. And he made the comment, because they asked him how his family was recovering, because his sister had been brutally raped. It was a horrible thing that hit the news. And they asked him how his family was handling that. And he said, well, we just understand that it's God's will. No, it's not. It's not God's will that somebody gets raped. That's not compatible with God's character at all. Now, can God take that horrible event and bring some good out of it? Yes. Romans 8:28 is clear on that. By the same token, is Satan at work in that instance as well, trying to wreak havoc in the life of that family? Yes. That's reality. That's the world in which we live.
Yeah, and I think it's important to make the distinction that God is in control, but maybe not. They call it depends on who you talk to, but divine determinism, that he's determining every single little thing. That, oh, it has its purpose. Well, it's a nasty thing, but if we fall into that, we're going to say, like, oh, then God is actually causing that evil. Now, he may have not caused it, but he's certainly not going to fail to use that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
In our lives.
And Rick Warren likes to say that God never wastes a hurt. Mm. That he'll be at work even when we're hurt to try and bring about good in that. That's because he is a good God and a loving God. And so he's not going to let that kind of thing pass without trying to work in it for our good.
Yeah.
You know, there's an example that comes to mind for me, because I spent a lot of time in my previous, you know, employment working with people who were addicted to drugs and alcohol. And there were times when, you know, you'd have a client come in and they'd be telling you about this horrible thing that happened. You know, they got arrested or they overdosed or there was some bad thing going on in their lives as a result of their use. And so, you know, even, I mean, and it's absolutely the case that there are people who believe that there is a God that can also fall into addiction. I mean, this is, you know, we're not prevented from having these proclivities just because, you know, we may believe that there is a God or we may believe in Jesus. And I've talked to people, you know, who come in and they're going through these horrible things. And is that the direct result of their choices and their behavior? Yes, I absolutely believe so. Is it possible for God to try to use those circumstances to reveal in them the character flaws and to reveal to them and to test in them the fact that they trust this substance more than they trust God to get through the day? Yeah, I think he may use that. Now, is it him causing their use so that he can test their faith? No, I don't buy that, and I don't think that's what Scripture's saying. But there is a reality in which we make choices, we make decisions, there are consequences, or sometimes other people make decisions and there are consequences for us, as in the example that I just gave. And yet, God can and will work in those circumstances to reveal in us what areas where we display a lack of trust, what areas where we maybe potentially were out of line that put us in the way of that kind of harm, etc. You know, and he can use those circumstances to accomplish that without necessarily having, you know, in his mind going, I am going to make this happen so that she has to learn to trust me more. Well, maybe not.
I think there's another aspect of this too that we have to understand, and that is, and this is where you really have to trust God. We may not always be the beneficiaries of the good that comes out of a particular situation. Okay, I mean, sometimes bad things happen to us, and maybe in this life we don't see the benefit that comes out. Maybe God brings that benefit to the next generation or to somebody else. Okay, but we have to trust that God is there, and I think maybe that's what Paul was talking about when he talked about sharing in the fellowship of Christ's sufferings. I mean, you think about it, Christ's sufferings did nothing for him personally. He sacrificed himself for all of us. And sometimes, you know, like in the case of, for example, a missionary, those missionaries that went into South America and were killed by those natives there. Their suffering ultimately resulted in those natives. And there was a movie made about it, The End of the Spear.
Yeah, it's Jim Elliot.
Yes. Elliot, yeah. Their death, I mean, what happened to them didn't directly benefit them, obviously. Yeah. But ultimately, those folks there were exposed to the gospel. And many of them accepted it. And it happened years after that event. But good came out of it, even though those individuals didn't see it themselves.
Or even a more recent one, the shootings that happened in Florida a couple weeks ago, a couple of the staff members who allegedly shielded some students, mm-hmm. sacrificed, you know.
Exactly.
Who knows what will become of those students whose lives were. Mm-hmm. Say by that act of, I am going to protect you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can speak even to my own life. My mom, many of you probably don't know, had multiple sclerosis for 25 years. And Lord, I guess, never saw fit to heal her, you know, even though we had prayed and done all that. And so we can wrestle with all those things. But that suffering for a quarter of a century, you know, but I see who I am today as a direct result of that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so, you know, again, did he cause that? No, I think that would actually impugn the character of God, mm-hmm. if we were to say, hey, he was actually the author of that and crafted that situation. Because while, yes, I believe that God is sovereign, he is in charge of all things, I also believe that he limits himself
because there's sin, free will, and stupidity comes along with that. That sometimes there's just some of that all factored in. And so, you know, and so we need to be careful. I know, Jack Cottrell talks about this idea that we can look at, like, God has nothing to do with anything. You know, God has everything to do with everything, or God has something to do with somethings, you know, and that idea of those kind of three different views of where we would look at it, from the atheist to a Calvinist to maybe where we're falling in that, that God, we're not saying God's not in control. He is in control. But because he's so much in control, he's actually decided to give us free will on that. And now he's going to use those things to guide us, to, you know, walk us through. And obviously there's scriptures, that you have to wrestle with of what that actually means, you know, and where that goes. And so I had looked, Amos 3:6 is one that I had wrestled with. It says, when a trumpet sounds in a city, do not the people tremble. When disaster comes to a city, has not the Lord caused it? Wait, what? You know, doesn't that seem to fly in the face of what we're saying? But to realize that nothing happens, I think we'd all agree, nothing happens without God's permission. We see that maybe in the beginning of Job, where he's allowing things to happen. It's permissive, but he's not. But it's not causative. And really, I mean, this is a deep question, you know, to understand that. And it's and we're not going to do it justice just in 10 minutes talking about it. But realize there are resources out there that you can email us and we'll point you to on that. I think another verse that I was looking at, Psalm 37:23, says, steps of a man are established by the Lord and he delights in his way. Well, we could look at that. Well, doesn't that mean that he's causing and choosing my steps? Well, no. You know, we could argue that when I follow God's way, that's the steps. It's a matter of choosing, that there's a responsibility for me to. So just understand there's interpretations of these verses to look at. But what I have to look at is, what do I know about God's character from scripture revealed, but also through the life of Christ and who Jesus, he says, you know, no one has ever seen God, only begotten God. So you want to see the Father? Well, look at me. Okay. Well, now I'm going to look at Jesus and decide who God is and how he functions. And what I see there is I see a man, Jesus, who is using those things, not causing those things. It's a difficult struggle for sure.
Yeah, there's something about this question that I think is important for us to remember, that oftentimes when difficult things happen in our life, our natural tendency is to go, God, what are you doing? And it's almost like we look up to him and point and we say, God, what's going on with you that you're letting this happen or that you're causing this or whatever? And yet at the same time, many of these situations that we're in reveal something about us, you know, truly reveal a character flaw or truly reveal a poor decision or truly reveal a pattern of behavior that is not godly. And we have to be willing to also take a look inside and say, rather, what is the situation revealing about me? You know, I keep ending up in this situation. I probably ought to take note of that, and instead of going, God, what's wrong with you that you keep not letting me have a relationship that ends in marriage? Well, maybe I should look in. You know, God, what's wrong with you that I don't have enough money? Well, maybe we should look in. Like, there's a tendency for us to look at difficult situations and go, well, God's testing me. Or maybe you're ending up in these situations because of a failure to trust him all along, or because of a failure with faith or behavior or lifestyle that is creating these circumstances. Oftentimes, it's much easier for us to look at God and point the finger and wonder why he's testing us, rather than pointing the focus into the mirror and say, maybe I need to look at what's going on in me.
I think the passage in Job is instructive, because in Job 2, in if you get to verse 5, Satan and God are having this conversation, and Satan says, stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face. And in other words, Satan's asking God to strike Job, but God's response is, he is in your hands. And when you think about it, that's true. We live in a fallen world. And so bad things can happen to us. Accidental things can happen to us. Acts of nature can happen to us. I mean, there's all kind of things that can and will happen to us at some point in our lives, including death, because there is sin in the world. And as long as we are in this world, there is a degree to which we are in Satan's hands, because we live in a world that is impacted by sin.
Yeah, and it's the ruler of this world, mm-hmm. right? And we know the ending. We know that Jesus wins right. in the end. And so this idea to remain faithful, and I think Job is a great case study for suffering. As he's told, why don't you just curse God and die in the psalm? But the psalms tell us that, you know, a fool says there is no God in his heart. And the reality is that's actually saying, well, because God's not acting on my behalf or in my situation, therefore he doesn't exist. Which is really, John Walton writes about this. He's an Old Testament scholar that actually gods in the ancient Near East, their function and their naming comes from their function. So they get a name based on what they do. So we see that all throughout the Old Testament, that Jehovah or Yahweh, the provider, the warrior, the king, it's based on a function of what he does. And so they say, well, the pagan gods didn't come into existence until they did something. And so we see God in the beginning, he creates. And so he's a creator God. And so when we look at all of that and put all that together, that because now we'd say, well, God doesn't exist. He doesn't seem to care about me. I'm suffering. This is happening. Really easy for you guys to say that sitting in your comfy chairs, right? But the reality is we can't get to a place where we say, God, you don't exist because you're not acting on my behalf. God, you don't care because you're not acting. He cares more than we'll ever know. But we have to, as JD put it, look at him and what he's up to teaching us, but also look at ourselves. Did I, in my own stupidity and ignorance, you know, why do I keep coming back to this over and over and over again? Mm-hmm. If I could just learn it the first time, you know, so how much would that save us for that? So we realize that we're not going to do justice to this topic, and I'm sure there's some of you going, but what about this? What about that? This is where you get to email us at info@goodnewsgathering.org, and we will do our best to cover. There's so many nuances to this question that, you know, is God testing our faith? Well, he could be, but he didn't divinely determine that that was going to happen, I think would be the position that we're taking mm-hmm. On that. So just realize that we are open to your pushback, your comments, your criticisms, totally open to those things. And you have the right to be wrong. So, you know, we'll just...
emails are definitely coming
in. Yeah, emails are coming. We're gonna,
those emails wow. need to go to robbie@goodnewsgathering.org.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. No. So.
Do not email me.
That's fine. Yeah, no, you're going to get him eventually. That's the reality. It goes up the chain. That's, you know, right. So just realize we want to help you go deeper. And part of that is when I was a child, I thought like a child. When I became a man, I thought like a man. And we're moving from milk to meat. And man, we have to wrestle with that sometimes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And there's been times I take a bite of steak and I'm chewing it forever. And I'm like, oh, something went wrong here. You know, I cut off more than I could chew. Something happens. I have to go back. And so just know that we're approaching this in, you know, in humility, and we're so grateful you trust us with your questions. And we'll try our best to handle those, but man, I'm not always going to be right on that for sure. Mm-hmm. But just as we close out, this coming Sunday is one of our class series. It's 301. JD, I'll just pitch it to you. Why should somebody consider coming to 301?
So at Good News Gathering, we have what we like to call a high culture of service. I mean, we stress that one of the critical aspects of the Christian walk is to be engaged in serving others intentionally. And so the Bible makes it clear that God has equipped each and every one of us in very particular ways with the skills and the abilities and spiritual gifts, etc., to be effective in service. And I think a lot of times people people want to serve and they come to church and they're interested in being involved in service, but the Bible makes it clear that God has given you a particular set of experiences and skills that can be used in particular ways to serve. And so Class 301 is all about discovering who God made you to be so that you can be most effective in serving other people. So we talk about spiritual gifts. We talk about the things that God has wired into your heart, the things that make you come alive, and your personality and the experiences that you have and all kind of stuff that help you be at the very best you can be in your service to both God and other people. And so it's a really fun class. It's a very experiential class, and it's one where you get to be very hands-on working not only with me as a teacher and some of the, you know, and some of the guided experiences that we walk you through, but you get to be really hands-on with God and go, hey, God, how did you make me and why did you make me this way and what am I supposed to do with it? And so I really would encourage anybody to come to that class. It's a lot of fun and the time goes by quickly. And you learn about how we look at service here at GNG as well.
So that's this Sunday.
It's this Sunday, right after second service. We'll feed you, and then we'll have class, and it's a ton of fun.
And there's no cost to that.
No cost to that at all.
If they want to get involved with that, what do they need to do?
So you can email us at the church office at info@goodnewsgathering.org to sign up, or you can just show up after second service, and you know we're not going to turn anybody away. If we need to print more material, we'll do it. But we just want you to come because we want you to get involved in service here at GNG, and we want you to be at your best in that service. And so this class is really going to help you do that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, and man, as we close out, again, we're so grateful you would tune in and be with us this long. So we're pushing, 50 minutes, I think. And so we're so grateful you would trust us with your questions. And we are open to any comments you might have on that. And as we lovingly pursue Jesus together and do that. And so we will hopefully see you Sunday. And if not, hopefully we'll catch you next week. We'll see you guys later.
Take care.
Take care.
Take care, everybody.